Well, other than the sounds of summer, a good question. How old are you supposed to be when you get married? In the olden days, or at least what we regard as the olden days, it was a lot younger than it is today. In fact, sometimes it was very young indeed. If a family lore in the Wilkin house is true, and that's a big question mark, if family lore in the Wilkin house is true, then my grandparents on my mom's side eloped at a very young age. And it didn't sit too well with my great-grandfather, although later he got used to the idea. I don't know how old they were, 16, 17, somewhere in that neighborhood. And that's not an unusual story if you go back enough generations to your family tree. Now, this is a conversation here in the first, 45 minutes of the program. I'm wondering whether I should let Jeff in on the conversation, because he married at a very advanced age. He married a younger woman, but he married at an advanced age. Should Christians counsel their kids to marry late? That is, to wait until the career, the college, the money, the house, pretty much your life is underway, and then to get married. It certainly is the conventional wisdom of the culture nowadays. Have you found yourself recently hearing about someone getting married at 18 and 19 and thinking to yourself, well, that's just irresponsible? It might even be wrong. I don't know, maybe there's something in the Bible that forbids it. Should Christians counsel their kids to get married late? It's a question I want your answer to here in the first hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. I was 23. In fact, one day over 23 when I got married. And I think, at first when I announced my engagement to my parents, my mom at least thought we were going too fast. We were a little too young to be doing something like that, getting married. A lot of things have changed. I think she was 19 or 18 when she got married. I might be wrong. In the next half hour or the next segment of the program at 3:45, Bishop Keith Ackerman is going to join us of the Episcopal Diocese of Quincy. We're going to talk about recent steps taken by two dioceses to leave the Episcopal Church USA and why. Dr. Kent Heinbigner will join us to discuss the church calendar. He's pastor of Charity Lutheran Church in Burleson, Texas. And then at 4:30, Rob Bowman joins us. He's got a new book called Putting Jesus in His Place, The Case for the Deity of Christ. And we'll talk about Christ's deity. So many say he never claimed to be God. We'll see if that's true. Ted Rosenblatt's going to join us. Now, the name is familiar because Ted is a direct descendant of Rod Rosenblatt. Ted will join us to talk about grace-centered parenting in the last half hour of the program. That's the lineup, and you can join us for the next 3 hours. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We're coming to you live this Tuesday, September the 18th. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. How have you counseled your kids? You got kids that are of marriageable age. Have you told them, honey, wait until you're out of college? Or wait until you're out of college and you've made a little money? Or wait until you're out of college, made a little money, and established yourself, maybe bought a house? It's too early to get married at your age. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Okay, so I am going to let Jeff into the conversation. I want to know why he waited so long. He already had a house, I believe. He already had a career. He already finished school. He was already well established and into his 30s when he got married. I don't know if that was a choice. Was that a plan, Jeff, for you to get married at your advanced age? Was that a plan?
No, it wasn't a plan. It wasn't a plan.
It took you that long to attract a suitable mate? What was the story?
Yeah, I really wasn't interested. My brother and I used to call ourselves the last of the Mohicans.
What do Mohicans have to do with it?
Just holding out.
Oh, okay, so you'd finish school. Did you have a house?
No, apartment.
You had an apartment. You were well established in your career. You'd worked probably at least 10 years in broadcasting by that time. You were ready to go.
Let me ask you a question.
All right.
Emma is 16. Mm-hmm. What if she said she'd want to get married in the next year? No. What would you say?
No.
And why?
She's too young.
Based on what? Do you have a? Is there anything in the Bible that says what age do people think Mary was married to Joseph?
She was most certainly in the neighborhood of 16, maybe younger. It's as likely that she was younger as it's more likely she was younger than older.
So does God's word have anything to say about what age is appropriate to get married?
It's a good question. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The respectable age, at least for my take on society, is somewhere in the mid-20s. That's the new respectable age for marriage. That's the responsible age to get married. And anything younger than that is viewed as either risky or outright irresponsible, perhaps even immoral. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And feel free to share your own stories of your own age for getting married and what your parents thought. I don't know if I remember this correct, because my memory is about as good as Wilkin family lore, but I remember sitting in my in-laws-to-be house, spending the weekend there at my in-laws-to-be, making that phone call to my parents. I remember where I was, what time of day it was, making that phone call to my parents, informing them that I was going to ask my bride-to-be to be my bride-to-be. And I might be wrong, and she'll probably disagree with me, but I think my mom's reaction was something like, "Oh, Todd," which means, "Have you thought this through? You're kidding me." And it wasn't that she had any disapproval of my wife-to-be. I think she thought we were too young. Now, we were still in school, and we planned to wait a full 2.5 years until I graduated. In fact, until my wife graduated from college. And we did. We waited that long. Which kind of set my mother's mind at ease, and I had to remind her, being the smart aleck that I was, that she was, I think, a freshman or a sophomore in college when she got married. I've seen the apartment they lived in Lawrence, Kansas. I've heard the stories about being married in college. They were high school sweethearts. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's go to the phones and see what William has to say, calling from his car. Hi, William.
Hi. Hi. I know that's Todd, from the retired pastor from the Southern Illinois District, but it's not about the age so much, because my daughter married when she was 20, and she was at River Forest at the time. And the reason that I'm calling is because of the conventional wisdom of finishing school before you get married. And they were going to get married about a year later, but she said, "Dad, what are you doing on Thanksgiving Day?" which was about a month away, and from when she was calling. And and I said, "Why?" And she said, "Well," she said, "Alfonso and I want to remain faithful to our Lord and our vows to Him, and yet we can't wait any longer. We really do need to get married, and because we love each other, and they had nothing, and yet we joyfully, because of somebody that wanted to honor being faithful sexually within the marriage bonds in this generation, and we were so delighted that our daughter took to the Lord's teaching and our teaching, that we happily got all the plans together within 3.5 weeks. We thought that was a lot better than to say, "Oh, wait," and then tempt them to be active sexually before they were married.
I think you made a wise decision, William. I think you made a very wise decision. What?
Yeah.
Okay, other than the monumental feat of pulling together a wedding in 3 weeks, in your private thoughts, did you consider 20 to be too young?
Not really, because I was more concerned about, I had always prayed that no matter what detours that my children took in life, that they would always end up a devout disciple of our Lord Jesus. And if they would marry, they would marry somebody who was devout. Well, she was marrying somebody who was taking instructions, who was from a Roman Catholic background, took instructions. And truly, they've been now married. This will be their 19th year of marriage, and they've that was more important to me than the fact that they had no money. but he was committed. You could tell he was committed. He says I'll work at anything. And he says I know that she's going to go away on her deaconess intern. He says, and I will go with her as long as when she graduates, she'll go with me.
Wow. But, well,
and we said, hey, this is a good son-in-law, you know?
Yeah, that's, if you find one, hang on. What do they say? Once you have found him, never let him go. Once you have found him, that's South Pacific, by the way, never let him go. Okay, there's William's story. 20 wasn't too young. They married for a very good reason, a very sensible reason, too. I don't remember having any money when I got married. I don't think I had any money in the bank at all. I had a job, but it was a very meagerly paying job that only lasted the summer, and then I was going back to seminary. And my wife had a job lined up for when school started, and in retrospect, it paid very little, although at the time it seemed like a king's ransom. I wasn't worried about it. Of course, if my daughter wanted to marry at the same age with those kind of prospects, I would worry about it. So what's going on? What has pushed even Christians to buy into the culture's conventional wisdom that we've got to wait until we're out of school and have everything in place, the car in the garage, the house signed for, and the career well on its way? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Or issue ZTC at KFUO.org.
You know, William's got me thinking. Christians are all disappointed, I guess, or upset with the issue of teen pregnancy. If we have encouraged our children to marry at late ages, have we not contributed to this problem?
Right. If we've bought into the conventional wisdom that says you have to wait until you're 25, otherwise you're being irresponsible, and you have all these other things in place, have we put temptation in our kids' way by encouraging them to wait perhaps an unnaturally long amount of time to marry, to put marriage off? Jeff's calling from Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. Jeff, welcome.
I'm really glad that call came before me. and I wanted to bonus off what you're saying as well, is that I really think that we were designed for younger marriages. But I really think what might be going on is that the constructs are in society and how we raise kids have kind of maybe stunted emotional growth, which would probably be why people at 18 or 20, or many of them may not be ready. But I think biologically, kind of not emotionally, but like otherwise, I think they were designed to be ready by that age. And society is kind of mucked around with what the natural course of events should be.
Jeff, thank you very much. Now, he raises a very interesting kind of psychological, sociological phenomenon, which everyone has noticed, and that is our children are maturing sexually earlier. I just read a story about this afternoon. Young girls are entering puberty earlier than ever before, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that we live very healthy and very well-fed lives. If you can track it, that the age for entering puberty among young women has gone back years from only 100 years ago. So they're maturing sexually earlier, and they're maturing emotionally later. I don't know if it's safe to say, because we say they all grow up so much faster now, but if you've got one in the house, you realize they don't grow up that fast. And society says to an 18-year-old, we used to say to an 18-year-old, get to work. You're an adult, you're part of society. Now they don't even have their full driver's license until they're 18. Did you realize this? This is what I know, being the father of a new driver. You can get your license at 16, but it's not anything but provisional until you're 18. There's all sorts of restrictions on what you can do. Why? They're irresponsible drivers. But you kind of have to let them drive at that age. So there have been moves afoot to move the driving age up to 18. No driver's license till you're 18. But think about it. You're 18, you vote, you go to work, you're out of high school. Most kids expect to leave the home, plan to leave the parents' house at 18, and usually end up doing it at somewhere near 35. So why are kids living at home so much longer? Because we keep them immature? And are they really ready then? They used to marry at 16, 17, 18 years old. A very respectable age to get married. But are 25-year-olds the new 16-year-olds? Are they growing up that much slower? Should Christians counsel their kids to marry later? 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's our in-studio email address. We get your questions and comments right here in the studio in real time. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc. Live this Tuesday, the 18th of September. If you've got a kid that's just announced the engagement, or you've just been through a wedding this last summer, how old were they, and did you think it was too young? Or did you wonder why they waited so long? Selena is calling from her car. Hi, Selena.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Very well.
We've become a society that is obsessed with stuff, and I think we tend to put that in our kids from very little on, is that they have to acquire stuff. And we've almost made an idol of the money and the things, the possessions we have. And so, therefore, everybody has to wait, you know, till they get enough before they can do this or they can do that or, you know, anything like that. And I think that we have just put a real burden on all of our kids by allowing that to happen.
So do you think that accounts in some ways for even Christians kind of being sucked into the culture that says if you marry before this certain age where your earning potential and your career and all those things are still as yet unformed, you're being
right.
irresponsible?
I think so. I really think we have bought into that.
Thank you very much, Selena. All right, Selena's weighed in. After two men, she's weighed in on the reasons she think it may be. Is it a good idea? Granted, the marriage age goes up and down with the changes in society, but it has moved farther and farther and farther out. It does have something to do with the fact that maybe we expect more of our kids by way of education. If you go back to the 40s and the 50s, it was not expected of each and every individual that they'd at least take a stab at 4 years of college. You could graduate from high school, get a job that could actually be a life's career for you and a job where you could support a family with a high school diploma. That's difficult to do, although some still manage to do it. I told my daughter that one of my brothers, seemed like 1980, somewhere in that neighborhood. And I think my brother was just a couple years out of high school. Maybe even 1 year out of high school when they got married. I can't remember. And she couldn't believe it. She could not believe it. She said he was, I think I said 19. He was 19 when he got married. Tim's up next, calling from his car. Hi, Tim.
One of the things that my mom has told me in the past is that when it comes to marriage and even parenting, even under the best circumstances possible, it's hard. So obviously, if the circumstances aren't the greatest, it's going to be even worse. So that is a thought of mine that I thought was pretty powerful.
What are the optimal circumstances there, Tim, that you think contribute to making a hard thing as least hard as it could be?
Well, being finished with college, having a career, having money, and having that stuff will make everything run a lot more smoother and can really help just your overall marriage. And when you not finish with that and you're not established with a career and you have money trouble, that is just going to be an added problem when that first year of marriage is even already really hard to begin with.
All right. Thank you very much, Tim. Okay. Chuck, you just had one get married, right?
Yes, sir.
How old was she?
23.
That's how old I was when I got married. One day over 23. Got married 3 days after my birthday. Thanks. Was that too young, too old?
Just right.
Just right.
That's how old I was.
How old were you?
23.
23. Okay. That makes sense. Like daughter, like father. Okay, now Tim said, it makes things easier if you have the career and the family and maybe the house and some money in the bank. But I do have to wonder, even with the older age of marriage, we still have that high rate of divorce. Sally's up next. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Pastor. I disagree as far as having everything in order. Because just because you have financial things in order doesn't mean you have your spiritual life in order. And I think you got a much better chance if you have a couple who has Christ as the center of their marriage together, regardless of their age and their financial situation, because they're going to trust the Lord to take care of them. I've seen plenty of people, I did explain, that have had it all. They waited to get married. They had all their toys. And they're not any happier than anybody else. And I think it's because of then their priorities becomes the stuff. And it used to be that in psychology, we didn't even teach that you went from childhood to adulthood. It's only been within the last, like, 50 or so years that there's the theory of adolescence, which that's, you know, in other cultures, adolescence doesn't go right from childhood into adulthood. And it's kind of an aberration that we see in our Western culture. I think we're growing a bunch of wimpy kids because parents expect them to sit around and do nothing and, you know, be adolescent.
Sally, thank you very much. Oh, it's true. It is true that adolescence is a concept reserved almost entirely for the 20th century in the Western world. Unheard of before. Bob's calling from his car. Hi, Bob.
How you doing?
What are your thoughts on this? Should Christians counsel their kids to wait to marry?
Well, I hate to be a relativist, but I think it's kind of relative. I think that depending on how mature the kids are, whatever age they may be, you know, I got married at 19, and we figured life out. Probably didn't start out on the best foot, but I think some of it has to do with the maturity of, you know, the individual that's getting married, and that's kind of the way I see it, anyway.
All right. Thank you very much, Bob. So Bob says it depends on the case. Here's Monica from Swansea. Hi, Monica.
I have a 23-year-old daughter who thinks she's got the world by the tail because of all the opportunities that are afforded to young women these days. And if we dare to have a discussion about marriage, her response is, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to advance a career, I want to go to grad school, I want to go to law school. I think there's a lot more afforded to women. And I, in my opinion, women can be a big part of why there's a delay in marriage.
Yeah, somebody has to say yes when the guy gets down on one knee. And if the girl is saying no, what are you talking about? I still have a lot of things to do before I get married. Of course, when men used to say that, I've still got a lot of things to do before I get married, they were called chauvinists. You know, I got a lot of wild oats to sow, and I got a lot of things to do before I strap on the old ball and chain. That was considered a chauvinistic viewpoint. So should Christians counsel their kids to wait to get married? We'll be right back.
With eyes that would glow, but she was too young to fall in love, and I was too young to know.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
We know that most of you listen to Issues, Etc. during your commute home from work. We also realize that since you're still at work, you can't listen to the beginning of Issues, Etc. Well, I have some good news for you. AM 850 KFUO rebroadcasts one of the earlier hours of Issues, Etc. weekday evenings at 7. So instead of watching primetime TV, tune in to Issues, Etc. again tonight at 7 right here on AM 850 KFUO.
Jesus commands us to love one another, not as we love ourselves, but as He has loved us. However, how then do you explain the 14th chapter of Luke, in which Jesus commands us to hate our father and mother, or we cannot be His disciple? That's the subject of our discussion on the next broadcast of Law and Gospel.
Listen to Law and Gospel weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on AM 850 KFUO.
More pro-life voices are needed in the halls of Congress. Will you help make that a reality in 2008?
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Are your members of Congress pro-life? What about your governor or state legislator? To protect the rights of the unborn and put more limits on abortion, we need more pro-life elected officials in Washington and state capitals. On October 18th, women from around the country will come to Washington for Real Women's Voices 2007, where they'll get the training they need to help elect more pro-life lawmakers. Will you join them? October 18th, Washington, D.C., Real Women's Voices 2007. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, where values thrive, and online at thrivent.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Sunday's New York Times had a photograph of little girls in Nepal. The caption said this: "Girls took part in a ceremony yesterday in Kathmandu, Nepal, in which they were worshipped as goddesses. The girls are believed to embody Telaju, a Hindu goddess who befriended an ancient king. She is said to leave their bodies once they reach puberty." I know nothing about this belief, but it is interesting that the caption said the goddess is said to leave their bodies once they reach puberty. You don't have to be a Christian to know that goodness leaves people, you and me included. Many Bible passages say goodness was already gone when we were born. It is called original sin, and this inherited sinfulness shows up in the actual sins you and I commit every day, not to mention people in Nepal. How to get goodness back is the real challenge. The Bible's answer is the new birth of baptism. Romans chapter 6 says, "All of us who were baptized into Christ Jesus were baptized into his death. Count yourselves dead to sin, but alive to God in Christ Jesus. Sin shall not be your master." So I googled Telaju and found more than I can read. Dead to sin, but alive to God in Christ Jesus is enough on goodness for me. I'm Dale Meyer.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, online at thrivent.com. We do more than work. We work with a purpose.
And yet, we're not too young to know this love will last, though years may go.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Open lines, we're asking that question: should Christian parents counsel their kids to marry late, or should they get worried if they want to marry early? Well, it's never too late, and you're never too old to finish that degree that you may have started or may wanted to have started. If it's an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree, a master of business administration, Concordia University St. Louis Center is there for you at 44 and 270 with classes one night a week to help you finish that degree. Find out more, 314-984-8840, 314-984-8840, or go to the What's New section of our website, issuesetc.org, and find Concordia University St. Louis Center Professional Education with a personal touch. You know, you think about it. I got to finish my degree. And then I got to get a job. And now that I've got a job, maybe I have a house or a mortgage or I'm paying on a car. I got to get right side up financially. Maybe I want to have some money in the bank. How can I get married without money in the bank? Lots of people have done it. Lots of people have gone into their marriages with their pockets turned inside out. Was that irresponsible? Was that wrong? Should Christians, in keeping with the conventional wisdom, counsel their kids to wait to get married? Is there a difference between men and women on this? In other words, is there an age at which it's irresponsible for a man to get married, but if the girl's that same age, it really doesn't make much difference. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's open lines for about another 10 minutes. Well, there have been consequences, there's no doubt about it. We've talked many times with several guests about the consequences of waiting, delaying the age of marriage. What happens is it usually comes in the form of fertility. People who try to have kids, after delaying the age of marriage, then they delay having kids until the marriage is well grounded, until both of them are set, until the house is bought and all of those kind of things. And by the time they start trying to have kids, maybe they're in the 30s. And their fertility has dropped off. And, of course, fertility clinics have reaped a harvest from this. But there are a lot of people out there saying, well, we waited. I wouldn't recommend this movie for its cinematic quality, but there is one of the funniest opening sequences of a movie that I'd seen in a long time. And no one ever probably watched this movie, but I did. I rented it called Idiocracy. It's about a guy who gets frozen and left over into the future where the world is basically run by idiots. Everyone's stupid. Because the premise of the movie is that all of the stupid people procreated and all of the sophisticated, urbane, educated people waited, couldn't have kids, and therefore didn't leave any progeny. So this guy enters the world 500 years in the future, and the world's being run by a highly populated group of idiots. And it's got a great opening sequence where they contrast two families, a young urbane couple who waits and waits and waits until the guy dies of an early heart attack with no kids, and the young guy who graduates from college, marries the first girl he sees, and procreates and his generations after them. It is interesting to consider the possibilities and the consequences of waiting. This email comes from Angie in St. Louis. She says, I think a lot of this depends on whether or not you found the right person. I didn't get married until 28 because I hadn't found the right person. I could have gotten married earlier, but it wasn't the right person asking. I think sometimes people get married just because everybody else is and is expected, and they just end up marrying whoever is available. The Lord has a plan for everybody, and for some, that is getting married at an early age, but for some, it's getting married at a later age. I will probably tell my daughter to trust the Lord to bring the right man to her life at whatever age, that it will be the right age. I do get tired of people telling me, she says, that I was just selfish and immature for waiting until I was older. Thank you very much, Angie. Well, I'm not questioning the Lord's plan here at all. The Lord's plans are his own. He doesn't let us in on them very often. What I'm questioning is, should Christian parents counsel their kids to wait for marriage?
You know, my pastor's daughter was married recently this summer, went to the wedding. She was 20. And I remember we were honored to be invited to the wedding. And I thought, well, that's little Lauren Whedon. You know, she's too young to be married. And she was 20, and I think she just turned 21 like a couple weeks into their marriage.
They're in school, right?
They're
still in school,
aren't
they?
They're still in school. They still are both, I think they've got one more year left at Concordia University in Seward, Nebraska. And I said, well, she's too young. And then I thought, what am I basing this on? And I had nothing. I mean, I wasn't basing it on anything. And I was like, do I have a thus saith the Lord on this? Does the Bible have anything to say? I remember Arthur Just saying that Mary was probably 16 years old. Is this just a cultural thing? Is there a Christian perspective on this? I didn't base it on anything from a biblical point of view, although I held to it dogmatically as if it was a biblical point of view.
Yeah, you didn't have a thus saith the Lord, but you might as well have had one. Well, there is not a thus saith the Lord on this. And it is true that the custom in first century Palestine was that men would wait until they're 30. That was when a man was considered to be full grown. That was adulthood for a man. And that had much to do with the fact that he was able then to support a family at that age. This was simply cultural custom. A man would wait until he was at least 30, and then the woman would be married off as quickly as possible after reaching puberty. Now, the cultural and sociological and economic reasons for this were obvious. This was not 21st century America. This was very difficult existence at any level, unless you were fabulously wealthy, where a man needed to be able to be gainfully employed or gainfully able to support a family. And these young women were considered, I'm sure they were treasured children, but they were considered financial liabilities to their parents if they stuck around and didn't get married after the age of puberty. That was the reason for it. So what about the rest of you? Should Christian parents counsel their kids to marry late? 1-800-730-2727. 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. 505-7850. And our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Cindy's calling from South County. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I think that Christian parents should counsel their children to not become unequally yoked.
Meaning
their Christian children should marry another Christian.
So age is not an issue at all?
Not necessarily. I mean, you know, you don't let somebody that's 14, you know, get married. That's way too young. But, you know, you really need to start, you know, putting it in their heads early that they need to marry someone like-minded.
Well, I had an email. Thanks, Cindy. I had... Although, I'll point out again that 14 is an arbitrary number. Isn't it? I happen to agree with Cindy that 14 is too young. But I have no real objective basis for putting the line at 14 or 15 or 16. I have no real objective basis for doing that. I have a lot of subjective bases for doing that. I got an email from someone recently saying you really have to talk about this when you talk about marriage. You have to talk about Christians marrying unbelievers. We will put that in the hopper. Matthew in Burridge, Illinois, writes this. He says, when comparing the previous generations with the modern one, I don't think it's necessarily a fair comparison because of the nuances of the, quote, vocation of being in your late teens, early 20s has changed. The Generation Xers and beyond are expected to transition into the vocation of college student, which would make excelling in that vocation difficult. The previous generation could expect to work in a variety of occupations without college, not so this generation. Well, that is true. Besides, writes Matthew, all this, comparing this generation with others, begins to break apart when you consider that in early America, men in their late 20s, early 30s married women in their mid to late teens. This says nothing of marriage patterns in the Bible. Hello, King David and Ashbishag. That was one of his wives? Maybe I should review my King David history. Well, yes. And the reasons for doing it in earlier America were very similar to the reasons for doing it in first century Palestine. It was simply the economic force of gravity. Men married later, women married earlier. And since many women died in childhood, in childbirth, a man might marry three or four times in the course of his life and have a number of children. I remember going through the old church book of the congregation I pastored for about a decade. A church book that went back to 1841, the founding of the congregation. And the original church book had a family register. And in this family register, most of the men who founded the congregation were on, when they came over on the boat to farm in southern Illinois, were on their second or third wives, not because of divorce, but because their previous wives had died at childbirth. And many of them had, in the register, 12, 13, 14 kids, most of which did not live to adulthood, but died in early childhood. So who set these expectations for the Generation Xers that they can't afford, literally can't afford to do anything except go on to be college students and therefore not married, not husbands, not wives? The world? If so, does this mean we have to follow? DJ's calling from his car. Hi, DJ.
Hello. I've struggled with this very question before too, and I was almost thinking that maybe this change in society where people get married when they're older hasn't led to a lot more premarital sex in our generation.
Yeah, we had someone who called earlier, DJ, who kind of driving in that direction. It's hard to imagine that it wouldn't lead to premarital sex if marriage gets later and later and the sexual experience begins at, well, what are they talking about now? The average is 15?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of premarital sex before you marry at 25.
Absolutely.
DJ, thank you very much. Andy's up next, calling from Kirkwood. Hi, Andy.
First, I want to congratulate you, Todd, on all the wonderful telephone calls. Your audience is great. I'm not going to go to the Bible for this. I'm going to go back, and as a former English major, to the Thornton Wilder play Our Town, and the scene where the two young people who are just out of high school are about to get married, and the second thoughts that they're having, and what options, I suppose you could say, they're giving up by going into marriage. And strangely enough, in that show, it's the parents who are encouraging them, no, go ahead, you've got to. Kind of a different take.
You're talking about that, and I remember this. Marriage was considered at the time, not at the time of the writing, but the time the play is set in,
mm-hmm.
to be one of the first steps toward all the other things that you achieved in life, not the thing that comes after you've achieved all those other things in life.
Exactly.
Thank you very much, Andy. Tremendous insight. Is marriage the thing that you wait to do after you've got all the other stuff done? Or is it one of the first steps that helps you get on the way to doing all those other things? It's a major shift in the way we think. Ann's calling from Crestwood. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I have a 30-year-old daughter and a 25-year-old son, both single. And my 30-year-old daughter, who's a beautiful girl, both of my children said that since we have a good marriage, they can't imagine that that's even hardly possible anymore, so they don't think about marriage much. And my daughter had two relationships that were going nowhere, so she just figures she's better off living by herself forever. And my son, who's an anomaly among his friends, has said to me he could not live with himself if he ever slept with a girl before he got married. And he's 25 and an athlete. He's amazing to me. He's kind of my hero. But he thinks women are crazy because in the relationships he's had, he said, the women don't tell you what they want. We're supposed to guess, and that's not possible. So he's frustrated. And so they both throw their hands up in the air, and I guess I'll never be a grandmother.
I got to ask, does that bother you?
You know, it did for a while, but if that's what's supposed to be with them, and they have been popping into church frequently lately, which is great to me, then, you know, where does it say that you can't die unless you're a grandmother, you know? So if they're happy and they can get through life without that, the most important thing is that they are the Lord's. That's the most important thing, not whether or not we have grandchildren.
Anne, thank you very much. Thank you. So there are two reasonable and sensible young people. I think 30 and 25 are still young. They're thinking, look, one of them is saying, the young man is saying, I haven't figured women out yet, and I don't know how I could make this work. And the other one is somewhat frustrated with the prospects, her prospects for marriage, and has just for the time being given up, although never say never. Jeff is living proof of that, never say never about marriage.
We've got a guest waiting, but we should encourage our listeners to think about this tonight. We need to bring it up again. I've got a lot of email, and I told a couple of phone callers. We'll try to bring this issue up again tomorrow.
Oh, you want to revisit it tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do that. We'll do that. Okay, so that's the question. Think about it tonight. Give us an email, issuesetc@kfuo.org, or plan to call sometime tomorrow during open lines. We'll bring up the question again. Should Christians counsel their kids to wait for marriage, along with the culture's counsel to wait for marriage? For the remainder of this hour, Bishop Keith Ackerman is our guest. He's a regular guest and Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Quincy. We're going to talk with him about recent steps taken by two dioceses to leave the Episcopal Church, USA. Bishop Ackerman, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Tom. Good to hear your voice. You doing well?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Praise God. Doing well.
Okay. Did you leave the Episcopal Church, USA, or did they leave you?
Well, that's an intriguing thought. Let's put it to you this way. It would be a bit like if you owned a house and people came to visit you and you liked your house and you said you're so welcome to come here, and every week they found something else they didn't like about the house, so they kept painting it and rearranging things. You walked in the house one day and didn't recognize your house anymore. So it's an intriguing question you ask. It's kind of what came first, the chicken or the egg. But I would have to say that as it relates to doctrinal realities, as it relates to the faith of the church, the problem is that the average Episcopalian and the average American sort of think of the Episcopal Church as an American denomination. If that were the case, then there would be a good case that could be made for saying, well, you know, we can do whatever we want. But we are part of a larger family, the Anglican Communion, and we have responsibility to the rest of the Anglican Communion. So to put your good question a little differently, has the Episcopal Church left the Anglican Communion?
And the answer to that question?
It would appear so.
So you view the steps that you have taken along with the Pittsburgh Diocese as remaining in fellowship, steps necessary to remain in fellowship with the Anglican Communion rather than steps necessary to break fellowship with the Episcopal Church USA.
Thank you. That is exactly right. Not everybody has gotten that, so you've done well. And that is exactly it, because our Constitution, that is the Constitution of the Diocese of Quincy, is written in a way that says that I am obliged, and I made this promise at my consecration as a bishop 13 years ago, I'm obliged to keep the Diocese of Quincy in the Anglican Communion. The actions of the General Convention of the Episcopal Church put that relationship with the Anglican Communion in great peril. So this is not a matter of a diocese saying something like, we're out of here. No, not at all. This is a matter of a diocese saying, what needs to be done to prevent us from being expelled from the Anglican Communion?
All right. What does it take to extricate a diocese from the Episcopal Church USA?
That's an intriguing question. I suppose if one looked at the Civil War, the question could be, what would it take for a state to extricate itself from the Union? But I suppose, to put it a little different way, the American church, that is, say, the province in this country, a.k.a. the Episcopal Church, is really a confederation of dioceses. In other words, we are not a national church. That's what makes us somewhat unique. And we are not governed by a national authority. The Episcopal Church Center is a resource center in New York City, and its job is just to keep things afloat. The General Convention, which meets every 3 years, in fact, can enact certain resolutions and canonical and constitutional changes, and it has done so. But what we recognize as we go back and look at the history of dioceses in the Episcopal Church, each diocese had to vote to enter into a relationship with the province. So, in fact, the question you ask is a good one. I mean, to enter in, it required two things, a petition and a vote by the diocese that wishes to join, and conversely, approval on the part of the body that does the approval. In this case, it eventually evolved into the General Convention.
How is this going over with the leadership of the Episcopal Church USA?
Well, I haven't really heard anything. I mean, it's a little bit like scriptures that talk about wars and rumors of wars. I've not had any direct communication. And in fact, I think that the one point that is missed is that we had to file resolutions 30 days prior to our synod in order to satisfy our canons, the canons of our diocese. And so these resolutions that have been put forward could be redone, reworked, and in fact, there are several matters before us that could alter them, the one being the meeting of the House of Bishops, the second being the response of the bishops of the primates of the Anglican Communion to the response of the House of Bishops of the Episcopal Church. So with that in mind, it's anybody's guess and everybody's prayer, as it were, to be able to see what it is that would come out of those various actions. And at that point, when our diocesan synod occurs in late October, we could be at a very different point. We have options of either rewriting the resolutions, withdrawing the resolutions, voting them up, voting them down.
So am I understanding you correctly, Bishop? Is it a? It is certainly not a foregone conclusion that, or is it a foregone conclusion that the Quincy Diocese, for one, will be officially breaking with the Episcopal Church USA?
It is not a foregone conclusion, and again, that's a good question. I like the way you've posed the question. The reason it's a good question is because we have always been obedient to the rest of the family, meaning that we must always receive the counsel of the worldwide Anglican Communion. And I think that's what makes the difference between the way some of our dioceses think and other dioceses think. Many of our dioceses have this sort of ugly American way of thinking, and that is, we decide and you will like it. And what we do in America is much more advanced than what you people overseas are doing, and so therefore, since this is our context, you'll accept what we're exporting. But there are a number of dioceses who understand that that's not the way that families operate. That is to say, if there's a member of the family who wants to be an independent and doesn't want to come to the family reunion and doesn't want to abide by the rules of the family, I suppose that's a choice they have to make. But that means the rest of the family likewise has an opportunity to respond by saying, why in the world is it that you say you want to be a part of this family, but every time we get together as a family, your behavior says you don't want to be?
We're talking with Bishop Keith Ackerman, Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Quincy. That diocese, along with the Diocese of Pittsburgh, have recently taken steps, at least steps that could lead toward a breaking of full communion with the Episcopal Church USA. So on a smaller scale than the full Anglican Communion, Bishop Ackerman, with what body will the diocese, given if they do in fact break with the Episcopal Church USA, with what body will the Diocese of Quincy associate itself?
It must be in communion with the See of Canterbury. It must be in the Anglican Communion. And so, again, we would say to the rest of the Anglican Communion, advise us, because what we have now is an anomalous set of circumstances. That is, we now have 53 separate bodies that have broken away from the Episcopal Church. These bodies represent thousands of wonderful lay people who now no longer are Episcopalians. They want to be Anglicans. They want to have the Archbishop of Canterbury as their Archbishop. They want to be part of a worldwide church and not an American phenomenon. But at this point, their only option is to be an Episcopalian or to be a part of a body that is not in communion with the rest of the Anglican Communion. We are going to live by our Constitution.
Can you give us a few minutes on the other side of the break?
Sure.
All right. Bishop Keith Ackerman is our guest. When we come back, we'll have just a few minutes with him, a couple more questions on the steps taken recently by his and another diocese to leave the Episcopal Church USA. This break is a good time to call 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Of course, as the bishop mentioned, a lot of it hinges on what happens Thursday when the bishops of the Episcopal Church USA meet in New Orleans. We'll talk about that after this.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.